Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and joining me now is Charlie LaDuff, the author and former New York Times staff writer, where he won a Pulitzer Prize, by the way. LaDuff has moved back to his hometown of Detroit, and he's now a TV reporter for Detroit's Fox 2 News and author of a new book about living and reporting there. It's called Detroit, An American Autopsy. That's a cheery title, Charlie.
It's really good to hear your voice again. I remember when I was living there, covering Queens and Long Island, I'd just be listening to you, and it brings back memories. And I heard that the haiku,
yeah,
right? To listen to haiku.
Sartorius.
A lot of people I know here think that's a fruit drink with, vitamin C added to it.
Yeah, well, a lot of people here, too. But, seriously, the subtitle makes Detroit sound hopeless, sound dead. Is that what you're trying to communicate?
Read the book. It's half dead. You can't lie about that. But it's also anatomy. It's what's connected to what? Racism, government malfeasance and corruption, police not responding, fire, ambulances, my own family, our history, money, what work is, and then when you put that together, what does Detroit mean in the American way of life? What did we mean 50 years ago, and what do we mean now? And I make this supposition, except for, bits of New York and the financial industry, Detroit and our way of life really made this country, made the middle class, created home ownership, mobility, et cetera. It popped. We've been saying for 30 years you have to make things. Everybody laughed at us. And then 2008 came, and we all realized, what is our economy? We're trading on exotic scraps of paper, credit default swaps, mortgages, tanning salons. That's not the way to get it done. And so hopefully in this book, you see we in Detroit are trying to shovel our way out, put our way of life back together. And I would say we're better positioned for the future than, say, a place like Phoenix or a place like El Paso, or any place that Vegas.
Better position than a place like Vegas?
Well, Vegas has gambling, but yes, it's the state of Nevada. Yeah, I think we're better positioned for a few reasons. One, we have coherent auto industries again, thanks to some bold moves by Washington. And if Chrysler could jettison Fiat, they'd be even more profitable. We have the busiest trade corridor on the continent with Canada, right through Detroit. We have all the fresh water in the world. So if we can get our – that's the future, but the present needs to be reconfigured. We need to get a hold on the corruption that just courses through our veins, our political and social corruption. We need to tear down these houses. We need to get the police working again. Once we can accomplish that, I see us moving again.
Listeners, anybody from Detroit want to talk to Charlie LaDuff? If you've lived in both our areas, or maybe you're just listening in Detroit now, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or even some of the national questions that Charlie raises through the story of Detroit in his new book, Detroit, An American Autopsy, 212-433-9692. And you mentioned the bold moves from Washington, obviously the auto bailout, and here's a little sample of the language that the president has used, and it goes just beyond Bin Laden is dead and General Motors is alive. Listen to this montage.
It is good to be back in Michigan. It is good to be back in Detroit. The best workers in the world. You've been working hard to build a better Detroit. That's how you bring new jobs back to Detroit. That's how you bring good jobs back to America. What's happening in Detroit can happen in other industries.
All right. Detroit, 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 paired with good, good, good. This wouldn't have been the kind of language in the pairing a couple of years ago.
No. And, maybe he's a little ahead of himself, but he is the cheerleader in chief. He has to be. Your previous caller, when you're talking about Occupy, your previous guest, Occupy Wall Street, the Tea Party movement, well, everybody agrees about the state of things and the problems. Now, we all want to get to the shining house on the hill. We have different ideas about how to get there. But the fact remains, we're all really scared. The good jobs are gone. you know, in mass for like 300 million of us to live upon. We're spending money, but how in the world are we going to pay it back? Because that good middle class life, where you're actually making things and putting value in the dollar, that's gone. So it was right to keep Detroit alive. It was right to keep the manufacturing heart alive, because if not for that, where is a future? Because New York's great. I love going there, and it doesn't seem like the recession hit there. But everywhere else, we're really struggling. It's not over. People are losing their homes. People are drowning in debt. They're losing their incomes to inflation. And, you know, the temperature out here is a little bit of fear, uncertainty.
It's funny about New York. I think New York both is disconnected from the intensity of the pain in the rest of the country. But at the same time, there are a lot of people who got socked in New York, who are still socked in New York, and don't get the media narrative, even in this town, about how we've skirted through. So I just want to acknowledge that. But your brother,
absolutely,
Billy, your own brother, seems to exemplify an American story from the last few years in your book. He was making $70,000 working for Quicken Loans, shuffling some of those subprime mortgages before the crash, and only working 3 days a week to make that living. Now you say he works at a screw factory making $8.50 an hour.
Yeah, that's what happened. You know, he was living the big life, and then pop, it was gone. And he looked for a while, and his wife was working as a receptionist there in the front office, and she said, "Hey, you want a job?" My brother's like, "Oh, man, great, a factory job, unions, pensions, days off, it's going to be awesome." Nope, $8.50 an hour and nothing else. And he was making more than that 20 years ago in high school. So my brother, being a really sharp guy, decides, you know, he's going to pass the time in this hellhole. He's actually going to work. So he works hard, and he upsets the balance there, because if you're a lifer, I don't know how many of the listeners have actually ever worked in a factory. I have. It's not a great thing to chain your life to a machine. It's very hard. And Billy upset the balance because there's a certain movement, a flow, a work speed. And he broke it, and I was interviewing him at his place, and the boss told him to go clean the toilets. And I heard my brother, 38-year-old guy, making $8.50 an hour cleaning toilets, and he goes in there, and there's some graffiti on the stall, which he thinks was intended for him, and I'll paraphrase it for public radio: hard workers suck. Now, we also have to blame ourselves here. Look, I'm not giving my people any wiggle room in this book. We blew it. We did not educate ourselves when we had all the money and all the great universities. We did not work hard. We stopped putting in an honest day's work. We gambled. We threw our children away. We did a lot of bad things, and we're looking back at the good old days trying to get a semblance of it for our children. And so Billy, to me, my brother, I love him very much. He typifies the fear of the American guy. But he should also be an example. I'm trying to encourage him to grow into this role of his now with this book, which is, man, show him how to be strong, dude. How to, like, get on with the dreary business, really having to buckle down, swallow that lump in your throat, and raise your family. And he's really that guy. And I'm proud, because my family story's in his book, too.
Well, good luck to you and to him. But before you go, you're in TV news now. You were a Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter at the New York Times. Now you're with Fox 2 in Detroit. That commercial TV news world is such a different universe from the Times.
Sure is.
And you've got, to put it mildly, a really interesting broadcast style. And I want listeners to hear a little bit of it. So this is about 30 seconds of a story you did while waiting for the cops to show up. A woman's home was broken into, and you had time to grab some lunch, take a bath, read to her grandkids, and here's a little bit of that.
They got the TV, the game machine, the laptop. 1.5 hours and still no cops.
Okay, it's all clear.
I'm getting hungry.
And iced tea, sweet, unsweet?
Sweet.
Sweet tea, ice, no ice?
No ice.
Sweet tea, no ice, large fries, cheeseburger?
Cheeseburger.
Please place your order ready.
One cheeseburger, sweet tea, no ice. Thank you, sir.
It's 2 hours later, and still no cops.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And there's a straw.
Huh, Charlie LaDuff on Fox 2 Detroit. Sometimes you can get a policy message out better with a production piece like that than all the earnest words in the gray New York Times, right?
True enough, but always a Times man, always going to be a Times man. And don't, what your listeners didn't hear was all the reports over the years I did hear chronicling response times, talking about the pain in the neighborhoods. Okay, well, if that doesn't work, let me take a little bit of Jackass, a little bit of Borat, a little bit of Charles Carroll, a little bit of YouTube, the New York Times, put them in a bag, shake it up, and end up taking a bubble bath at this lady's house while we're waiting for the police to come get a burglar. 4 hours later. It's unfair and it's not right.
Viola in Rego Park, originally from Detroit. You're on WNYC. Hello, Viola.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Thank you for calling.
I'd first like to say that, Charlie, I love your reports. My family still lives in Detroit, and every time I go home and I watch the news, that's the best thing about watching the news. And so my question for you is, because I think we're both around the same age, and I remember the city being not the best city to live in, but people having hope when I was younger. And now I feel every time I go home and I see the city, people are absolutely apathetic. They have they don't have a fighting spirit anymore. They tolerate incompetence. They just literally tolerate it and accept it as a way of life. And the contrast that I feel living here in the New York City area compared to Detroit is that people don't tolerate it. It doesn't matter what their socioeconomic status is. Here in the New York City area, people do not tolerate incompetence, and they expect for their voices to be heard. So how do you feel what's a way that we can instill that in Detroit? And I'll take my answer off the air.
Well, it's nice to hear you, girl. Hello from all of us back here. First of all, let's just remember, we're all adults, so I'm not lecturing grown people. You know what I'm saying? They will hate you if you say, how do we educate these people? Look, the fact of the matter is Detroit was never that good growing up, even when my mother was a child. They just didn't tell you. It was a fairy tale. And then when you and I were growing up, that was the height of the crack epidemic, so this place was scary. Then it emptied out because the whites left, then the black middle class left. Now it's sort of forlorn, it's empty, it's falling down. My thing, my contribution to my community, and hello to Arthur Sulzberger Jr., that Times thing that I was taught, is, look, here's the contract, here's the money. Here's where it did not go. We demand answers. We demand better. So that apathy, that's not what's really going on. Maybe people aren't sophisticated about how to petition their mayor or their city council person, but these streets are boiling. I mean, they're boiling. People are angry, and maybe what we can do is be supportive. Let them know. That's right. No, New York doesn't take this because the Bronx used to look like Detroit looks. How did New York turn it around? They had fires every night in the Bronx. New York almost went bankrupt. They had still a financial advisory board. New York is still under a consent agreement, and if they start going into deficit, their finances can be taken over. So I look at New York and L.A. as models for how we can live. I've studied them. I've studied the policing. And just basically, call home, come home, and don't give up on us.
Viola, thank you for your call. We've just got 30 seconds left. The flip side of all of what you just described is that reporters are now writing about a new food scene in Detroit, silkscreen bow ties made in Detroit. Is there a new hipster Detroit that's contributing to starting a rebirth, or is this fairy tale?
No, there's new hipster Detroit, but there was old hipster Detroit. You know, there's businesses coming in and spending money. That's great. Like I said, we have a future, but you cannot build a castle on quicksand, right? It's when you have kids and you're a hipster and then you have kids, you're moving out of here. Schools aren't any good. The ambulances don't show up. Garbage pickup is spotty. No way. So I'm committed. We got to order the present before we really start applauding our future. That's what's got to be done, in my opinion.
And we have to leave it there with Charlie LaDuff. And I should have known from your radio appearances on this show when you were here in New York with the Times that you were made for TV, now with Fox 2 News in Detroit, author of Detroit, An American Autopsy, just released. Thank you, Charlie. Good luck.
Love what you're about, my brother.